Welcome to the Hometown Foods Let's Talk Guthrie County. I'm your host, Marcus Mackey. Joining us today is Iowa Senator for District 12, Amy Sinclair. All right, Amy, so there's been some property tax bills going through both on the Senate and the House side. Can you talk a little bit about what the Senate has been doing with their versions?
Sure, and we have a couple of property tax bills really trying to get at the issue of property tax relief in our property tax system with an error within the Department of Revenue that then required us to give some extra time for local budgets to be certified. But now we're working on a couple of bills that are more broad in their property tax review. The first bill is Senate Study Bill 1124. It's the first phase of property tax relief, and it's aimed at controlling the growth of property taxes, as well as fixing the foundation of Iowa's property tax system and streamlining that system that we have. The second bill is Senate Study Bill 1125, and that's the next phase in property tax relief. It's focused on restructuring local government revenue streams, reforming the system, and then bringing real relief to Iowa's property taxpayers. Honestly, some things that the bills do, we look at simplifying and consolidating the levies and setting actual caps on those levies so they're not as open-ended as they currently are. It eliminates some loopholes that have allowed local governments to exceed those set limits, and it acts to increase voter participation in bond referendums and debt consolidation. That second bill, that second step then, it takes a stab at making less of your home's value subject to the tax. So we talk about the rollback, and we talk about it being based on value, but then we only tax a portion of that, which a percentage of that. And so it doubles the homestead benefit up to $10,000 per household. It doubles the military service up to $4,000 per household, increases the qualifying threshold for the senior property tax freeze so that those folks who are on fixed incomes aren't forced to move out of homes that they've had paid for, address business property taxes by reducing the taxable value from 90 to 80%, and it standardizes the local option sales tax statewide. Now, that is a controversial piece because it triggers the Natural Resources and Outdoor Recreation Trust Fund, so that's part of the conversation, but it has become a little bit more controversial and I think is going to be the part of that really is open to some conversation.
All right. And with some of those property tax bills, I know that some county board of supervisors are worried about moving forward, being able to run things the way they have been or need to be. Is there something that you guys are looking at to kind of help on that end of things as well?
Well, and I haven't heard any specific questions outside of, you know, there are communities that are in growth mode. And so how do they keep up with their growth in population? If they're not going to be able to capture new growth in construction, those are some of the things that I've heard. I've also heard some concerns about creating new levies. You know, we have all kinds of different levies, and I've heard from some supervisors who are frankly concerned about creating targeted levies because that takes some of the budgeting control out of their hands, and they're concerned exactly what you're saying. If they don't have that budgeting control, are they going to be able to do business as they've done or be innovative in how they do it? But let's be clear, while I'm a former county supervisor, I know what those conversations are like when we're trying to set local budgets. But if that's defunct state, we don't come up and say how much money do we need and then go set a levy that matches it. We come in and we look at the revenues that are coming in based on what the taxpayers of Iowa are paying in the current code, and we budget according to what we have coming in. So it's like the local governments have a system that's set on its head. You don't, I mean, in your own budget, you don't say, I want to spend $140,000 this year, but your household income is only $100,000. That would be a ridiculous way to do it. There's nothing you can do to add on to that. But local governments are currently able to just set their levies higher so that they can get to that $140,000 that you and your household budget couldn't do, and neither does the state. And so when we talk about having balanced budgets, we need to have it be based on the amount of money that's available, not the amount of money that we want.
All right. And talked a little bit about something you and I both don't really know a whole lot about, but there was a bill that would ban minors from drag shows in Iowa. What do you know about that?
Sure, and I'll be honest, I didn't look very closely at the bill. The bill has not received a subcommittee hearing yet, and just on its face, it was just a little problematic because the way it was written so broadly that you might have a female playing the role of one of the soldiers in the Nutcracker, and because it was a female in a male role, a child couldn't go watch the Nutcracker in a ballet. So just the way it was really, really problematic because it wasn't written targeted at sexual productions per se, those drag queen sexualized productions. It was written very, very broadly, and I think just the nature of the way the bill was written, it never got a subcommittee hearing.
Okay. Something that I had seen and a little bit heard about was some people were questioning, well, if you're looking at putting parents back in control in some of these other places, this bill would kind of take that control back away from that. So why is that happening?
I can't say that I disagree with that. I am wholeheartedly in agreement with parents having the right to raise their kids as they see fit. The show is so sexualized so as to be obscene, then suddenly that we're wandering into child abuse area there, and that's not allowable. But to say we should ban all parents from being able to access anything just because it offends our sensibilities, I'm not sure is something I would be on board with anyway.
All right. And then there's a restructuring bill as well that kind of, if I remember right, came from the governor, but works on just different appointed department heads. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. The governor has presented a very, very lengthy bill, and I'll be honest, I haven't read all the way through it yet because it's hundreds of pages, because we're talking about taking the executive branch of state government from 37 cabinet-level to 16, reduce the size of government, and to create a budget benefit for the taxpayers. There are currently 513 vacant positions that would just be limited in this restructuring. In 2023 alone, it would save over $18 million, it's estimated, just from those vacant positions being eliminated. Nearly $3 million of that from the general fund of the state of Iowa, which is the real impact on what income tax and sales taxpayers are paying. And then an estimated total alignment savings over 4 years. So the long run would save over $214 million. And that's using conservative estimates of what these savings would realize. It essentially brings departments with similar business functions together to improve the efficiency and decrease costs and to streamline services to the folks who use them. It also centralizes similar programs into single agencies with resources and expertise so that you get outcomes for Iowans rather than them. You know, you might have the Department of Revenue and the Department of Management serving in a similar role, but a consumer in the state might have to go to the Department of Revenue to deal with a tax issue and then circle over to the Department of Management to follow up on whatever it was that they had going on. This would merge some of those agencies together to make that all more streamlined for a person trying to do business and live and pay taxes in the state of Iowa. And over time, those technology expenses are atrocious. And frankly, some of our departments were still working on legacy software programs that are incredibly expensive to maintain. And so making a transition to a more streamlined and efficient technology system is just one of the big parts of this government realign, in addition to eliminating those vacant positions.
All right. And some concerns that I've heard from a few different people are they're worried that this may lead to some people that may not be exactly the right kind of person or have the right kind of expertise or have no expertise at all could be put into some of these department head positions.
Well, I mean, let's be honest, that could happen now. those positions are appointed, and so it's hard for the Senate, who confirms those positions, to know outside of just getting a copy of their resume and doing a brief interview. They may not be subject matter experts now, so that doesn't really change. It just consolidates those positions into single roles.
Okay. And then another concern that I had heard was some people think that this may lead to just kind of getting more people that would agree with whatever Governor Reynolds wanted to do.
We're always at risk of that, whether we have 16 cabinet positions or the 37 that we currently do. The governor appoints those positions, and it's really easy to get an echo chamber when you're electing who are advising you. Again, I think that pushback on it isn't legitimate if it's not legitimate now. So reducing the size of state government and making it more efficient, to me, outweighs the potential for two sets of fears that were brought forward. The potential for that is already here. If it's here now with 37, and if it's going to be there at 16, it's here now with 37, because it doesn't change the process by which those directors are selected.
All right. And looking at some of those other things that we talked about, if there were any other concerns people might have, what are some things that you've got that may put them at ease?
You know, honestly, another concern that's come up to me is that the changes surrounding the community-based correction system, and I honestly think there are some valid concerns with changing up community-based corrections. Frankly, our community-based correction systems that are managed at a regional level are serving the needs of the folks in those regions, and they have some pretty good results. They're managing some recidivism, and so I'm not sure, but you know, if we're talking about just cost savings, then sure, you're probably going to see some cost savings with the changes to community-based corrections. But in the long run, are we going to see cost savings if it's impacting recidivism and our prison populations? And so I think that community-based corrections piece is one that we're going to have to take a little harder look at and make sure that restructuring that is the right decision.
All right. Thank you very much, Amy.
Thank you. Always a pleasure to chat with you.
That was today's Hometown Foods Let's Talk Guthrie County. Discover today the many advantages of shopping with your hometown team. Hometown Foods in Guthrie Center, Panora, and Stewart. If you missed any of today's program, you can find a recording of it online at raccoonvalleyradio.com under the podcast tab.